All right, guys, welcome back to another week's episode of Architecture Matters podcast here with a special guest, Harrell.
Hello.
Yeah. No weasels on the podcast, not me.
None.
This episode, we're going to have a question that comes from the UK, so stay tuned. All right. Finally back on the podcast. I finally roped you back in.
Yeah, all right. Man, it's about time.
Yeah. How you been?
Pretty good. Enjoying the long weekend.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's what it's for.
Exactly, man. You know, like, it's crazy. No one's outside. So you can...
Everybody's inside or what?
I don't know where they went, dude. They went to the lake. I don't know.
It's not like that one day that we went to Legacy West.
Yeah, no. Dude, so I came here to buy gelatos.
Uh-huh. Oh, is that place good?
Yeah. The one here in the corner?
Yeah.
And there's two guys fishing, right?
In the pond?
In the pond. Dude, big fish. Like,
no way.
Freaking this big, like a foot, you know?
No way.
And they were taking them. I thought...
They didn't get the seagull?
No. I thought it was just catch and release, but they put them in a bucket.
Oh, I didn't know that. You know what's crazy, though? When we walked it the other day, I was like, oh, they're cleaning it. Bro, that thing still looks dirty.
Yeah, no way, dude.
That thing still looks dirty. All right, man. Nah, it's good to have you back.
Thanks, man.
So, guys, we got a request from someone in the UK. Lachlan, that's his Instagram. He asked us if he sent me a voice note on Anchor, but it was kind of hard to reply. So, thankfully, he reached out to Instagram. And guys, just reach out to me on Instagram or the podcast Instagram, Arc Matters Podcast. And so this is what he said. He said, "Hi, I'm making a short architecture documentary on my local city here in the UK." He already sent a voice message to the podcast. However, he thinks this can, you know, better results contacting us directly. But in short, this is his question. He would like to have some expert opinion on why a city's architecture is important for both the city and the people living in it. So this episode, we're gonna dive in and kind of, you know, nothing scripted. You know, we just heard this. I read it twice. I listened to it once and then read it twice, but I didn't really think about it. But I kind of already have.
I can tell.
Stupid. I already started thinking of, like, you know, like two ways of approaching this. You know, Harrell is our special guest of honor.
Experts.
Bruh.
My guy about to take some bro science.
He's a what?
Some bro science.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, man. I mean, hey, we're the professionals. You know, we're living the dream. We're out here in the DFW, you know, making the bukus big bucks. So,
stop the car.
Man, all right, we're gonna have to get you with the setup so you have the computer. You can do all this sound. we'll definitely get that, man. You're gonna end up being an honorary co-host, you know, eventually. But
nice.
let me take a sip of my Topo Chico. Let me ponder.
Non-alcoholic.
let's do a little cheers to that. You know, always gotta have that in the office. And then let's start thinking about this question. You could take a stab at it first. Why is architecture important for the city, both for the city and for the people?
Well, the expert stick. I think the first. All right. I think the first thing that comes to mind is the aesthetic, like, because I feel like that brings, I guess, tourism.
Okay.
You know, like, people from outside, I think that's the first thing that notice about is a certain city.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I guess architecture overall, I would probably also involve maybe landscape too, right? Mm-hmm. Architecture, because that, you know, that matters.
Yeah.
When you go, you don't, you know, what, for example, people that go to, you know, New York and the, you know, it's not the Brooklyn Bridge or what's that one?
High Line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
People go there and they, you know, for community, I guess. And if it, those places weren't there, I mean, why else go to those? You know, like, it's, I feel like architecture is good for the community. It's giving back to the community. And when you do, you know, you have, I guess, more, you incentivize people to be in certain areas, bring more business, you know, stuff like that.
Would you think the aesthetic is only, I guess, valuable or, you know, you mentioned how because of the aesthetic, like, people are coming to visit, right? The tourists, thinking in my own headspace, it's like, that's the reason why I go. Right. Yeah. I go to these cities because I know, oh, there's a Zaha building there, or, oh, there's a Frank Gehry building there, or, oh, there's a new Beltline, like in Atlanta. That's something I want to check out. The Green Belt or whatever they call it. I don't even know what it's called, but I know of it. Right. But I'm thinking, like, putting it in my own perspective is like, well, why do
Westover.
West over? Oh, man.
Some Cedar Park in there.
You know, but I'm thinking, like, why? So, like, I want to go for those reasons, those architectural aesthetic reasons, but why? The why is, at the end of the day, is because, well, I'm a designer. So do you think, like, normal folk, right, like non-architects, non-designers, would still be going to these places for not necessarily the same reasons, but for the same thing?
I think people that are, I guess, designers or are in our field will probably not like the sensor, but I feel like the, you know, people that are not in our field, like, I guess, regular people, if you would, you know, that don't think about, you know, the design process, if you would, they don't, you know, people just go to places and they like the pretty pictures.
That's what I was thinking. They just go for the
Instagram.
That's
what catches the
eye. They go for the Instagram shot.
Yeah.
Not really for the impact that it's having within the community. So let's take Highline, because I was actually just there. Let's take the Highline, for example. You know, a lot of people that aren't in tune with the design aspects, they could be going there just for the picture, right? Because there's the Zaha condos on it. There's like an amphitheater seating over a street. There's a lot of greenery. A lot of nice like pockets of seating, and I saw people taking pictures, especially of Zaha. But are they realizing the benefit that it's providing, both for the environment, both for the people? Because if you think about it, Central Park is really the greatest piece of landscape there to as an escape from the city. But now the High Line is another escape for them. Because when you're on it, like, yeah, you're surrounded by buildings, but during, like, this type of weather, there's so much greenery, and it's, you actually don't notice, you're only one or two blocks away from whatever highway it is on the west side, but you don't hear the cars.
Really?
Because of the buildings, and because of the greenery, and because everybody's, like, you know, walking and talking, like, you don't, like, it's a, you know how landscape can be a buffer between, like, you do berms or trees to buffer out, like, noise cancellation. Like, that definitely does happen. But you think people are really noticing that, or they're just like, oh, wow, like, they're in La La Land, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think people are...
I don't think they notice. And I think that's something that more people in society need to become, like, accepted to or need to start to realize. Because a lot of these things are impacting the city and the people, but you know, when we're just going like day to day, like going to the supermarket or going to an office or whatever the case may be, like they're not noticing these things. So, so the question is, and the first things I was talking about, I thought of, you know, he's asking why a city's architecture is important, both the city and the people living in it. So when I first read that, the first thing I thought of was, well, I could take it from an educational standpoint, like a school standpoint, or a career standpoint. And what I mean by that is, when I look at it in the realm of what I was taught in school, what professors taught me, what I was thinking for my design projects, you know, why is a city's architecture important for the city? Well, first of all, the building, if it's designed correctly or designed in a certain way, is going to be bringing people in, right? There is some type of an aesthetic where like there's always the brother other concept where it could be designed to, you know, its surroundings if it's in a historical district, or it could be designed to be like a Zaha or Frank Gehry, something completely different or something of that nature. Or it can also be, you know, in school, I was always taught about the experience, right? So, like, I've mentioned, like, the Guggenheim, or like the High Line is an example. The Brooklyn Bridge that you mentioned, those are an experience of when the user, no, but like some people don't like to say user, but like when the person in the community is experiencing and walking through that space, like they start to feel something.
Yeah,
and it's you can't really put my like finger on exactly what it is. But something starts to like kind of stir your emotions about this space, and you're like, wow, this just feels different. So if I look at it from a school standpoint, you know, it's always supposed to like kind of match in, like because like yeah. if you look at Houston in the zoning, like you have like a little one story, two story home, and then like skyscrapers. Or I've actually in New York, I see that kind of too, where there's basically like party walls, you know what I'm talking about? Like yeah. it's a bunch of, you know, it's one huge building, but there's a bunch of party walls. So it's different, you know, stores or occupations. But then like this, like think about townhomes and then just one townhome in the middle, empty, like non-existent, like they demolished it.
Really?
Yeah. So like, okay. So now if you think about like what goes there next or what was there, like it could either be a super short building compared to like 10 stories or 20 or whatever it may be. Or it could be something like too out of scale. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I feel like that.
Like the proportion and aesthetic has to match its surrounding. If we're talking like why is it important in a city aspect, without getting too into like environmental and green energy.
Well, I feel like. Like very often, it's about persuasion, right? Like we like for example, mm-hmm. us, right? Like we design apartments, mm-hmm. right? And more often than usual, like you, let's say you find, you know, like the project, the client, this the developer wants it to be like, let's say, 12 stories, but the city only allows 8, mm-hmm. right? And they can go and say, okay, well. Let us do 12 stories, but you know we can implement this type of retail business or this type of landscape. And let's say the city likes that, okay. And then you can get a green light. Mm-hmm. And so let's say one developer does that, right? You got it gets approved, and there's a new 12 story building being built in, you know, mm-hmm. in a place where there are no, you know, 12-story buildings, mm-hmm. but then give it a year or two, and then now you have one building that's 12 stories. Maybe in, you know, 3-5 years, there's more, mm-hmm. right? More mm-hmm. buildings that, and it keeps going up and up and up. And I feel like that's how
those other projects start to try to get those variances.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Like here in Dallas, right? Where is that? I think it's in Uptown. There's what. I think it's Goldman Sachs I think they're bringing, okay. I think it's going to be called the Goldman Sachs Tower.
This thing
is going to be huge, tall. I think it's going to be the tallest, you know, skyscraper here in Dallas. And I'm pretty sure, you know, if you put it next to other buildings, it will probably not look the same, obviously because of the height. But they're bringing a lot of business, right, from New York. And when where there is money, you know, they're like, hey,
come on,
you know,
let's bring it over here. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point, like the variances, because in our multifamily projects, a lot of the projects are able to go taller, or get a little slack on, okay, you know, they might require 300 parking spaces, but they're gonna let you do 250. Or it's only allowed 8 stories, but they're gonna let you do 12 if you know you're adding, like you said, that retail, or maybe they're adding some type of public space or greenery. So those are ways that the city's architecture could be you know implemented and like benefiting for the community and the society, because especially in like Austin or California with their crazy parking regulations, like. You pretty much like your whole site's at the end of the day, your whole site pretty much needs to be a parking lot, right?
Yeah.
Like that's just what it is for a lot of the cases. But when they're going for these like variances and they're reducing that, well, like if it's close to a school or like I said, you're doing these public spaces or certain types of retail or shops, they're, you know, that's creating finances for that community. So they're going to be a little more lenient.
Yeah, well, if we keep it in multifamily, I guess a topic. For example, here in Legacy West, right? like before the pandemic, the shops here, right? It was packed with people.
Booming.
Every weekend, it was booming, right? After Legacy West was built, it dragged everyone from here to there.
Okay, so do you think that Legacy West, that architecture, like how did that benefit this community? How did it benefit this city? Because technically
business.
Well, sure, but there was already business at the shops.
Here? Well, I guess so, but I guess you with Legacy West you get more, you know, more restaurants, more other than shops.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of restaurants, and I think there is a major improvement if we talk about a pedestrian from a pedestrian point of view, right? Because it's very walkable. There's a big pond. You have a pond here, but there, I guess, you know, it's closer to buildings. There's, you know, apartments at second floor and above, so there's more of a community. And when you come to think about it, whenever this place was built or was designed, it was obviously designed for a certain, I guess, demographic. You know, like, okay, it's going to be a little bit higher end, you know.
More upscale.
Obviously, there's a lot of sidewalks. The sidewalks are pretty, you know, wide for people. You know, you can walk in. You can traverse through and you don't have to worry about cars as much. That's why also they implemented now a lot of speed bumps, right? Which is kind of annoying. But now I guess this specifically, I don't think was intended when the whole I guess all Legacy West was built or designed. But if you go there, you'll see certain type of people, right? And that is people that are there either to have a good time or to show off, right? Before the speed bumps,
I need the ching sound.
before the speed bumps, you get cars like
I still be seeing cars revving. Yeah, when we were there
the other day, I got pulled over because of that.
I wasn't revving it, dude. That cop said, he's like, no entering.
He just gave me a warning. It was just a warning, but
hold on. It's funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting how you mentioned those speed bumps, and I wouldn't be able to speak too much on it. But to his question, for why is the city's architecture important for the city and for the for the community. I think it's important for this conversation to and I won't talk about it on it too long, but not to limit it to buildings, right? Because how you're mentioning the sidewalk is a good size for retail. It's a good width. It's not too narrow.
Yeah.
It's the speed bumps. Roundabouts. I've saw an image of a bridge going over water, and the bridge was going straight, and then it curved into like a circle, and then it kept going straight. Nice. And people are like, "Oh, why are they doing that? Like, it's more money. Why don't you just go straight?" Well, if you think about it, roundabouts and that type of bridge civic design, right,
mm-hmm.
is to slow the traffic down. Because if not, everybody's going to be going 120 miles per hour, and there's going to be more accidents, right? So when you're thinking about like the design of a city, like there's urban planning, yes, there's buildings, but then you have to include the infrastructure, like civil design, like dams, bridges, the speed bumps, things of that nature. So I think that's another aspect. And I know in the UK, there are probably a ton of roundabouts.
Oh,
I think it's definitely more more applicable in the UK than here. Like, I think there's one in Fort Worth that I know of, and here, I mean, the only thing I can think of is like around this pond, like at the shops. But even when we like, it's still two ways. It's a narrow two ways, but it's technically still two ways. Mm-hmm. Now, if it was only one way to drive around the pond, that would be a better circulation design to slow down traffic.
Expert stake right there.
But yeah, I mean, I can't think of any other, like, too many.
Dude, but like, I mean, I feel like what?
Nothing. Keep going.
What, did I make a face?
No.
I think, you know, for example, if you add, you know, places to interact as a, I guess, as a human being, like you put like some blocks along, you know, some sidewalk, and it can be used for, I guess, as sitting area. Later, you know, it can be used for skaters. I know people don't like skaters, but you know, I think
I'd rather kids skating there than somewhere else in trouble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and you make a good point, because in Europe, there's a lot of plazas. In America, I mean, there are plazas, but I don't think there's as many as, you know, Europe has.
Mm.
So meaning like, you know, yes, like in multifamily, we have these courtyards, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now imagine this. Imagine you have a U-shape. I'm gonna be smart, right? I'm gonna be the expert, right? Imagine you have a U-shape mixed use 5/2 podium, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a U-shape where you have a courtyard, but it's more public than a courtyard. It's not really like, it's not softscape, it's more hardscape, right?
Okay.
But you have that U-shape building with that hardscape courtyard, and then there's you know, maybe a secondary, not, you know, it's not a primary road, secondary road there, and you know, then there's people living across the street. Those people can come into that hardscape courtyard, and there's a fountain, there's some seating areas,
yeah,
you know, and it's not private for the residents, but it's something public for the community. And I think like here in downtown Dallas, the AT&T, where's that big screen?
Like the Star?
Discovery, something like that.
Yeah.
You've been there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that has some restaurants. There's some steps. There's some hardscape. The topography kind of.
Yeah.
You know, like they did that on purpose. And I like that's there's like a little insulation kind of cube. Not cube. There's like a sphere. It's like a,
yeah.
Or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like there's a little bit of interaction there. And that way there's an actual safe space for the people. And obviously it's bringing in business, right? Because they have, and there's also like condos and offices up there, and then the business on the ground floor, but that's, people are already there, and just creating another safe space for people to kind of just like chill out, have their lunch and do their thing.
Yeah. I think architecturally for a city to benefit from it is to provide, I guess, opportunities for community, yeah, like these type of things, like landscape. Mm-hmm. You know, how can you make it I guess, interactive, you know, for people. Once you put it there, and you know, if you have, if you have, I guess, good marketing, good places, good, good business there, I mean, it can drag a lot of people, right?
Two things. Did you ever see a study of how they did the paths on like a campus?
No.
So okay. Before I get to that, at Tech, when you're going from the architecture building to the sub, give me a rough percentage of how many times you took like a paved road or you walked through the grass.
Through the grass.
Like 99% of the time, right? Yeah. So they actually did a study, or not a study. It was technically it was a social experiment study where they built a university campus, but they didn't build or you know, pave a way for any paths. After a few years of students being on campus, they noticed which routes the students were taking.
Oh,
because
that's smart.
Because those the grass there and whatever is going to be, you know, more destroyed than the rest. Yeah, yeah. And then they turned that into the path.
Nice.
So what you're that made me think of what you were saying made me think of that, because like when there's these opportunities for the community to just literally create, because like we're humans, we're pretty much unpredictable. Like we all think differently, we all do things differently. Like I might want to eat standing up, you might want to eat, you know, sitting on a curb versus someone wants to be like on a bench or someone wants to lay down. Like when these spaces are created so that humans can create their own opportunity with it, I think that's the best way that it could be. That's the best way it could be utilized.
Yeah,
because there's so many variables to it. But when it's designed as like it can only be used for this, then it's like, well, a small demographic of people would actually use it versus like, you know, 80% of the demographic, they would like to use it for something else. But it's, you pretty much like made it off limits.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the big architects, I guess, the big firms are doing, right? Because when you go to like, let's say, Instagram.
Big architects like who?
Like you go to Instagram and you see, you know, like you go to like a, you know, new OMA building or like a, you know,
who? Nah,
yeah, you know, they, especially I think OMA, I think they have this, I think I've seen like about two bridges that they've done, and they're always incorporating landscape to these designs.
That's right.
So when you look at you know, these big firms, that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're creating. So they make a structure. Let's say, you know, it's a bridge or a building. You always, what's interesting about these projects is that they seem to go with that route. You know, they try to implement a lot of opportunities for pedestrian, I guess, use and community, you know. And
I think the best places in a city designed well, it's limited vehicular traffic.
Of course.
It's all pedestrian access. It's very walkable, it's very breathable in the sense where there's nature, but there's also space.
Yeah.
It's not just like cramped up, you know, building like zero lot lines. And that's going to happen, because in New York, that's all over the place. But so does that mean like New York's not successful? No. What I'm saying is like even when that happens, they still find other ways to make it successful, as in like these like smaller pockets. There's a bunch of hidden courtyards in New York that like no one knows about except the residents who live in that neighborhood or in that block.
Nice.
So yeah.
Maybe this is, I don't know if this is stupid, but can you imagine like, let's say like 50 years from now, there is like a let's say, you know, there are places for pedestrian use, but you know, when you walk and you see, you know, good ads or big screens
like Times Square.
Yeah. But what if there is like later down the road where, you know, there's too much, I guess, density and there's this new thing where like the experience is now for vehicular, from a, like a,
for vehicular?
Yeah, for like from someone driving instead of someone walking.
Talking about flying cars? Yo, nah, I know that's where you're going with this.
No, I didn't think cars. A lot, dude. But I mean, you know, I don't know.
I think that'd be a little dangerous because there's a lot of new billboards.
Yeah.
Right? The digital ones. So mm-hmm. when you're on the highway, you have that standard billboard that doesn't change because it's literally like an image, right?
Right.
But then there's the digital ones that every so often they switch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I saw a pretty cool one in like Addison going towards downtown. It could have been in New York. It's like a Dracula one.
Dracula one.
Yeah, or maybe I saw it online, but I know I've seen it where it's like there's a bunch of knives.
What?
There's a bunch of knives.
I mean, trying to give you nightmares.
No, it's an image.
you're driving 30. You see the man? I'm going 50. You're going 60.
I think it's images of like knives, right? And then there's blood like at the tip.
What?
But then at night, like there's like light shining on it, and it creates like the shape of Dracula. And it was a promotion for a sign. So stuff like that were like digital ones that are like constantly flipping, like. That's a distraction. Like, do you not think that's a distraction? So, this actually ties into you know the city of an architecture, but it's not specific to a building. Driving down the tollway during Christmas, what do you notice?
The trees that are you know what are the twinkle lights?
They got twinkle lights on them, and they're red.
Yeah,
you don't find that a distraction?
I do, but I think it's cool to drive around them.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, like people are already racing on there. People are already going, you know, bonkers. You know, shifting into eight gear.
Not the cap.
You know, like I mean, at first I noticed it and I was like, of course, like oh man, that's awesome. But then I was like, wait, that's a distraction. Now it's not distracting to me because I'm already aware of it. And I expect it, and I just, you know, I see is red. Like,
I mean, that's part of the experience, right? You know.
Well, yeah, but see, architecturally, is that benefiting or hurting the city?
I think it's beneficial, especially at night. You know, you don't want to.
Let's look up the statistics of how many car crashes have been caused because of that.
I mean, if you're a drink or two, you know, that's a different story.
You're seeing blue, green. No, yeah, I definitely, it is beneficial because when you're walking alongside it, it looks nice. You know, you take a little mommy out on a date.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at the lights, you go get some coffee, you know. But if you're driving 80.
Yeah, I mean.
Swerving on the tollway. That's like, yeah. You know what I mean? So I think everything could be a little argumentative where like, like one person could see it as, oh, it's beneficial for the city, but another person can be like, well, it's empty land. They could build housing there. Versus you and I are like, well, that's a nice green space for, you know, parents to come and do picnics. And that gives them kind of an escape from that day of life where they're hustling and you know, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah. Someone else is like, well, there's homeless people, why don't you build something there? Both impact the city in positive ways. They're just different.
They are. Well, like, I mean, isn't New York going like what's this?
New York's sinking. We can't talk about New York. That place is going under soon.
I mean, I watched this documentary a while ago where I think they were trying to build or they were trying to revitalize this park. I can't remember which one it was, but it was getting crowded with so many buildings that this, I think it was in Manhattan actually. I think it had grown so much from a building aspect
mm-hmm.
that the landscape, all the, you know, parks, it was getting kind of, it was fading away.
Haram! You can't do that. You gotta keep it.
So it was very, I guess, locked for, I guess, people, you know, business,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't, it didn't cater to people that were, you know, I guess, you know, people that want to mm-hmm. have a, you know, walk or stuff like that. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think we'll get to that point here in Dallas anytime soon, but.
There's too much land out here.
Too much. Oh, yeah. So I'm driving, I'm driving around, I'm going back home like earlier today, and I noticed a CLT building, and CLT building.
What is that?
It's basically timber. So they're using timber to build this.
Is it new construction?
Yeah, dude, I've never seen CLT here in Texas.
Wait, C O
L T
C L
C L T compressed
laminated timber.
Yeah,
compressed laminated timber.
It looks cool, man.
Look at this, giving you guys new vocab, new construction types. Yep. Man, look at the experts.
Yeah, and it's in this corner, and I'm pretty sure that place. I don't know what it'll be. I think it's gonna be some type of some shops, probably. But
how many stories is this?
It has to be.
If it's more than mid-rise, like it's probably gonna be multifamily.
It's got to be at least five.
That's got to be a multifamily. I don't think probably. I don't think they're doing mid-rise CLT. Offices.
But it's CLT, and I'm pretty sure. I mean, when you look at it from a distance, it's pretty. It catches your eye.
Mm.
So stuff like that, you know, I'm pretty sure the building will end up looking really good.
Yeah.
And it's next to 121, and it's next to the tollway, so it's probably gonna. Going to drag more people.
What are some benefits to that? Because there's in history, like for the Chicago Fire, right?
Yeah,
we've seen these construction types evolve, right? So if we're talking about this heavy timber, what would be like, how is that benefiting or how is that important for the community or for the city's architecture, either for the city or for the community?
Well, especially with this new material that it's getting implemented in the market,
mm-hmm.
I guess what catches the city's
2023 IBC.
Yeah, what catches the city's attention, I guess, is the renewable materials that mm-hmm. this project is using.
Right.
2023. Everybody's
Well, no, dude, they're making a new construction type for heavy timber.
They are.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or they're adding it within one of the types of construction.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's one of the things. One of the things that even 10 years ago, or like maybe 5 years ago, the experts were saying, "Oh yeah, timber for construction? Yeah, no way, man.
Stop the cap."
But look at us now, dude.
Look at us now. Look at us, bro.
Who would have thought,
bro? But if so I got cousins in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Bro, they be dogging us for having wood frame houses.
Really?
Yeah, they call them sticks.
Why? They use concrete, huh?
They use concrete because of the hurricanes.
Tsunamis and stuff like that.
They got hurricanes over there.
Mm.
So I think if we're going back to like architecture as buildings, the construction type and the constructability of it, that's going to impact its importance, right? So...
Mm-hmm.
I actually just mentioned it in a podcast. In the previous podcast, I think it was 1871, 18 something, the Chicago Fire, right? Mm. And the Chicago Fire happened, and all the buildings, all the high rises. This is the only thing I remember in history class, by the way. I ain't gonna lie. I'm gonna keep it 100 with you guys. All right, I don't lie out here. The only thing I remember in history class. Shout out to that.
Did you pass?
Barely.
I took it twice though.
Hey man. you were dreaming in that class, bro.
No, I'm just lying. I'm just kidding.
Bro, funny story, during the history 3, during the final, I fell asleep.
No way, dude. Really?
I fell asleep in the middle of the final.
Professor, man, he talked his voice. this dude probably drink NyQuil before talking, before going to class.
Emotional, damn it.
I felt like I was drinking NyQuil, dude. Oh my gosh.
This dude was the Jigglypuff or whatever.
He put us to sleep, dude. Oh man. No, but for real, the Chicago Fire, everything was made out of wood construction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a huge fire, the whole thing burned down, and then literally all the architects from New York and all the East Coast, they all flooded to Chicago to rebuild it, and then long and behold, they start using steel.
Yeah.
Right? So
man, you paid attention.
Just a little bit, man. Come on, you gotta give.
Stop that cop.
No, you gotta give.
Stop that cop.
Bro, you gotta give the bro, you're distracting me. You gotta give the listeners and the audience a little bit of, some knowledge. I'm this is an educational podcast for the kids,
Yeah.
But yeah, so like I think the building construction material aspect of it, you know, that's going to be important, especially because like if you look at like you know, like Rome, like all the Colosseums, the Parthenon, the Pantheons, and all that, like, you know, it's obviously made out of the stone, very decorative, you know, with the Corinthian Dorinth columns. I'm not going to talk too much. I'm going to sound stupid. Doric. Ionic.
Yeah.
And Corinthian.
Yeah.
Those three. Fun fact, Doric is the oldest one. It's also the most simplest. Yeah. Simpler one. Shout out to the question of the day.
Oh, at the office. Yeah.
And I had to Google it just to double check because I was going to put Corinthian just because I don't know why. Because like, because there's like variations of like detailness.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, that makes sense. Like the most simplest one would be the first one.
I think Doric comes from Crete.
Greek.
Crete? Yeah.
What is that?
It's just an island near Greece, I think.
Okay. Well, yeah. So Greek.
I think, man.
Okay, Harrell spitting that knowledge.
I think it comes from, it might be butchering the name, but I think they're called the Manichaean. I think they were one of the first ones to use it. I might be wrong. Don't quote me on that.
Well, so think about it. Like, if you were to design something in like Rome or Greece or Turkey, right, versus the UK, right, or versus New York, or you know, Dallas, or if you're designing something in the year 2080, how are you, well, like, what type of materiality are you going to be using? I mean, I would think you're going to use something that is like, you know, with the whole brother other, you're going to do something relevant to the neighborhoods around it. You're not going to be doing you know, wood frame construction if in 2080 we're all using like steel and this super high-tech technology. Like, it's going to be outdated. So I think that has a big importance on the city. Because then building codes start to change as it becomes more like accessible. And because once more people start using CLT. Once people start using more CLT, and then they find out more of its like pros and cons, and things of that nature, the building code is going to start to shift.
For sure. Like you mentioned, now we're getting a new building type.
Yeah. Based on I think it's you know how there's like A and B, like 1A, 1B, like 5A, 5B. I think it's gonna be like a B to one of the construction types.
Really?
Yeah, heavy timber, just because of the fire rating. And so it could be used for high rise.
I think also what changes the architecture is new material, right? Like for example, CLT. I guess it wasn't new, but when you try to implement,
well, the only real CLT would be like log cabins. If that's even considered it.
No, because that's not compressed laminated.
Yeah, that's true.
But
so then it's fairly new, because I know in the new PIC has mentioned it in the new they're gonna implement in the new IBC.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I'm not trying to use that.
I mean when I come to think about it, like, imagine like years ago when before steel, you know,
they were struggling.
They were struggling. And whenever, you know, the new, I guess, steel started to you know, started getting used, it changed the whole market, you know? Yeah, like, no, everything's getting built out of, you know, steel and then concrete. You combine them, boom, you get these, you know, very structurally efficient buildings.
So what do you think is, what do you think is easier to construct?
I think it really depends.
I feel like steel would be a lot harder.
Steel?
Because all the welding and bolting.
Yeah.
Concrete would definitely be easier, but I think wood would be easier than steel.
Wood?
I think wood construction would be easier than steel.
Mm.
Have you ever seen how they connect the trusses to each other? Dude, it's literally just that like rectangle thing with like spikes.
Yeah.
Like, bro, that thing ain't holding.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
It's really crazy. Yeah. Or think about this. Man, I don't want to get it wrong. So there's cast in place and there's precast garages, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Didn't they say cast in place garages? There's literally nothing holding up, holding it together.
Yeah.
They said don't go to a construction site that has cast in place garage because it's literally its own weight is holding it up.
Yeah.
So like that's like. That boggles my mind. Like, that's crazy. Because a little poof and that whole thing timbering, that thing's crumbling.
Dude, can you imagine, like, the guy, let's say you, whenever, you know, whoever, I guess, designed the Doric
column
for the first time, you know, the guy, whoever designed it, right, I guess, died. And let's say this guy comes back to life and, you know, like 2 millennia years ago, and then the guy sees his design being built, like being, you know, used, and this guy's like, "What? This great this idea was crazy to me."
Or someone stole his idea, and he's like,
yeah. I think. Can you imagine, you know, designing something that impacts, I guess, the you know, the world of architecture and building overall, and then mm-hmm. you know. 80 years from now, you see that you're
a pioneer.
Yeah, whatever you
see, and I think that's hard. I think that's hard to do now, because
of course,
because you know how they say like there's no original ideas in architecture anymore. Like we're basically just copying each other to a certain extent.
Well, it's,
like you can't really pioneer a new construction type or a new style, like Gothic, Art Deco, organic.
That's true.
You know, it's already been done.
Mm.
Like, how are you, like, I've been thinking about like a new way to do a multifamily project or a new way to design something. And it's like the only thing I can think of, it's already being done. Adding in like coding and some type of engineering for the facade so that like your louvers move with the sun because there's some type of coding in it. Or like you're in a high rise, your condo glass, it's frosted. But then at a certain point, whenever the sun hits it at a certain angle, it starts to like become opaque. That's the only thing I can think of that's like innovative and like new. But bro, it's already being done. Like, I know it is. Like, it's, if I thought of it, bro, anybody thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, we're at that point, right? But even, I think I was listening to an interview Tom Main was doing. And this guy was saying,
"The boy."
He was explaining and going through his design process, and he was basically, I think, he grabs different, I guess, good ideas from other people, and he compiles them together
and creates his own.
So
not the cap.
Bro, he just steals. Nah, I'm playing. I mean, that just proves that there's no original ideas anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we heard there's only so many ways to do a one-bedroom apartment? There's only so many ways to do a studio. I mean, they're all going to look the same at the end of the day.
I think it also, what impacts that is the materials that people use. Like, you know, I think I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people go into, you know, facade design.
Mm.
You know, especially, you know, big firms or like firms that, you know,
mainly why? Because, focus on that. Because there's a lot of like originality into it.
I think so. I think, you know, like how many, you know, like when you go to, let's say, downtown Dallas, there are buildings that have like a, you know, the facade has this intricate design, and it almost always involves shadows, right? It always involves
that's common for high rises,
because
there's not much they can do.
Exactly.
So they got to do something with like the angle of the facade, or the building needs to kind of like, there's one that kind of like over the street, you kind of angles over the street or something like that, or some like type of mullion design facade. Yeah, but I feel like that's all they can do on high rises.
Yeah, I mean,
can't really do too
ultimately,
much.
Ultimately, and going back to the question, I think the city, that's one of the benefits that the city can take from it. I guess, you know, business. I think also one thing that I don't think we mentioned is to have uniformity, especially in single family houses.
Hold that thought. So, do you think or like an organic design would be more beneficial, or something more non-uniform? Because like how there's only so many ways to do a unit. I mean, there's only so many ways to do a building.
I think you get to a point where if you want something new, just gotta, you know.
Who is that benefiting?
What do you mean?
If you're just doing something for the heck of it, like Zaha or Frank Gehry, they're doing these weird Guggenheim Disney Walt Center blobs, right? Is that, like, who are they doing that for? It looks amazing and it looks really cool, but is that really benefiting? It is benefiting the city in one way because it's a new attraction.
I mean, look at
pushing,
the vessel.
And it's pushing the envelope.
Look at the vessel.
Boy, don't hate on my vessel. Okay, for the vessel, does that benefit?
Look, what?
I would say it does benefit because it gave a new attraction. It gave a new space for artists and creative, a new looking tower, right? But it's also not beneficial because, unfortunately, people are being stupid and deciding to jump off.
Yeah.
But do we have to be designing for those type of people that are going to abuse the design? Because all it really does is give an attraction to the city.
I think that's the point, though.
Isn't that enough?
Yeah, I think it just sucks that the vessel was, I guess, turned into this, you know, thing
monstrosity.
Hurrah!
And I think as, you know, from people in our field, that's kind of like, oh, the vessel, like, what's the point of it?
Yeah, nobody likes it.
Right, but
they've never been, so they can't really talk about it.
Yeah,
I've been like three times.
And I see and I understand why people that are, you know, in our field don't like that building from, you know, for several reasons, you know, gentrification and I guess you could say,
but that's some not people, hold on, but that's not the vessel's fault.
Of course, it's not.
That's the whole Hudson Yards.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not Heatherwick Studio.
Yeah. It's like saying, you know, don't hate the game, hate the player.
Man.
You know.
Hey man, we be playing, all right.
I mean, you can hate the building or the structure all you want, but for what it is, dude, how many people travel and decide to go to the vessel just to take a picture, to be there?
That's true.
You know, and you know, people,
and they're not going for just a day.
Oh, so of course.
It's giving. You know, it's booming up that neighborhood or other aspects of the city, it's bringing attention to them as, like, you know, the architect who did it. But
yeah,
on uniformality,
well,
what were you going to mention on that?
Well, that you know, for example, in residential, purely residential, I think that's what's lacking. I think the uniformity kind of hurts the market, the housing market, at least from at least single family homes, because you know, you can, in this district, this jurisdiction, you can only use this type of material. You know, it's almost always brick. Let's only use 70% brick, 50% brick. The rest can be siding, hardy.
You just said brick twice?
No, I'm just giving like different percentages.
You did 120% brick, bro.
No, I mean, the different percentages that you can use, you know, based on, I guess, city.
Bro, if the HOA told me to use 120% brick, I was like, bro, that ain't happening. We ain't building.
Dude, I mean, over time, that gets boring.
Yeah.
You know, and even if you look at the single family home market, it's not
cookie cutter.
It's cookie cutter, you know?
Mm-hmm. See, and I think that's a big importance for architecture that does push the envelope, right? That is trying to, like, stand out. It is giving a different context or a different story to the city, because, like, there's always that historical neighborhood that can't be touched, that has to get renovated, that has to, you know, because it's historic to the city. But then the rest of the city, it isn't tied under those laws, under the historic preservation. So then you're able to kind of, like, design outside the box, and it gives I mean, if you go down to like San Antonio, to like to the Alamo, it's a different feel, than, you know, other parts that are like on the outskirts or a different part of downtown. Mm. So, I mean, I think like it's all important in its own way. But I mean, it's really subjective. Like,
it really is.
Of what makes it important. Mm. Because everyone has different, like, not only likes and dislikes, but different wants and needs.
Yeah, I guess on that aspect, the city needs to chill, dude.
You know, on the historic preservation.
No, oh, I mean, right. I guess it's single family houses. Mm-hmm. They're you
well, that's more. Regulations. I think it's more HOA, the homeowners association. There, aren't they the ones that restricting of, you know, you need 120% brick?
I think so.
Yeah, it's the HOAs.
Yeah, well, you know,
which are foolery.
Me coming from that branch of, I guess,
architecture. Oh, okay. Architecture. Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing that I don't like. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, later down the road, I want to design my own house. Mm-hmm. But I don't...
With 120% brick.
I don't want to be constrained to a 120% brick. You
got
to
make sure that you're not in the HOA.
Yeah.
But like, but here's the thing. If it's not an HOA community, odds are that it's probably not an upkept community. You know, 6 cars in the driveway. You know what that means. The grass ain't getting cut. You know what that means. Mm. I mean, the you know, you got the paint being chipped off and the railing, or like everybody has a different type of fence. Like you can see through one is chain link, one is you know, wooden post, one is metal.
That's
true. You know, it starts, that's why HOA has those regulations, so that like it can all look like a nice community when people come in. You don't have like too many, like, I mean, they don't want it to be low income, like at the end of the day.
Of course.
You know what I mean? And they don't want it to look like, you don't want a pink Barbie house next to everybody else that's like, you know, looking normal.
Well, it was still...
It's 120% brick.
I mean, where do you put the other 20? You know, like, just put layers of bricks there, like... For protesters, you know? Stupid.
Like, yeah. Okay, so to bring this to a close... and you really had to listen to the whole podcast to get the real nugget. The nugget always comes at the end, all right? And no, not what you're thinking, all right? But this is a gem, so I want everybody to listen up, all right? So the question was, we didn't mention this, right? But the question was, why is the city's architecture is important, both for the city and the people living in it? So we talked about aesthetics. We talked about, you know, the design. We talked about...
Usage,
or maybe how it makes you feel and the experience that you get, because maybe you just want to go to a nice park. But we didn't talk about our favorite, life safety. Life safety, of course. And I mean, if you think about it, what's the real purpose of a building? It's to make sure that everybody's safe and can get out safely. Mm-hmm. So I think building wise, you know, we've been talking like urban master planning, you know, designing a city, maybe some civil. But at the end of the day, for the building, besides design aesthetics and like, oh, everybody wants to come here, take a picture, or it's some eco-friendly green design. If people can't egress out of it safely, then there's no point in the building.
Of course.
You know, so at the end of the day, it's something that, you know, you just got to learn. I think life safety, egress, making sure like occupant loads. I think that's the biggest thing, because
you think so?
I mean, I think that's the most important thing, because it, like, if that doesn't work, it doesn't get through city approval, and you can't build it.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that there's enough egress stairs to make sure that everybody can exit. And of course, depending on like if it's an assembly space, you need more than if it's, you know, R2 residential. And I would say, I mean, if I'm thinking like a practical, like fire sprinklers, like to make sure like all that's intact, because at the end of the day, nobody wants, like, we're all using these buildings for a certain purpose. And I mean, nobody wants to be like, man, this building might fall at any moment. Like,
yeah, but that's its
importance within the city, to create a safe environment for the people occupying and using it.
Well, I think when I think what's safe for you know, what's beneficial for a city in terms of, like,
I think we'll be using benefit, but it's that important. But
same, yeah, same, well, difference. I think life and safety and all these things, like, to make, like, regulations and stuff to, you know, that you do to make sure that the building is safe. Mm-hmm. I think that's not what benefits the city, is for the project's benefit.
Right.
It's right, like a requirement.
Right. But that's like a two part, you know, mm-hmm. Why is it important for the city and why is it important for the people living in it?
Oh,
yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that type of safety and stability is important for the people living in this community because mm-hmm. they're going to be safe.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really benefit. The only way it benefits the city is by keeping the people around alive. Other than that, life safety doesn't benefit the city.
Mm.
But it does benefit the people because it keeps them alive.
And from getting sued.
Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, I trip over a little a little uneven carpet and I'm still... I get hit by a FedEx truck. Dude, apparently if you get hit by a FedEx truck, it's like $7.5 million.
What?
Yeah. I'm about to go
really? Wait, hit, like...
If a FedEx truck hits you, really? 7.5 might be exaggerated.
How fast? How fast are we talking? Stupid.